Hello everyone. This is the final episode I'm doing about the organized crime part of my childhood that I say for the last time I never asked for. And I also say this for the last time. I hate all parts of the organized crime part of my childhood. And I will always and forever hate all the organized crime parts of my childhood. I never approved of any and all parts of the organized crime part of my childhood. Never have, and I never will. Always and forever, I hate each and every aspect of the organized crime part of my life. Now, without further ado, let's get into the final details of the organized crime part of my life. When I was about 5 years old, there were sex workers, the ones who engaged in prostitution, for example, the ones who would do brothel work, bar, casino prostitution, massage parlor related prostitution, the ones who were known as call girls, the ones who were strippers. And the ones who were phone sex operators. And the ones who would do even porn tapes. Meaning they would make their own porn, or they would show their porn tapes to people that they trusted. They talked to me about me becoming their pimp. I was horrified because the pimps in the sex industry world in particular that I was forced to be in, they were the type of pimps that were very typical. Physically abusive, date rape, drug minded, meaning they would pretty much poison you then rape you unconscious. And even if you became conscious, they still raped you. The ones who would have their, the sex workers under them would have them drugged up and would have them inebriated. I mean, it was hardcore drugs and with some pills as a way of drugging them up, and inebriated meaning hard liquor. And they would have them addicted to tobacco, you know, mainly cigarettes. And have them, as the saying goes, smoking like a chimney. And we also have them addicted to gambling. So when they came to me about these ideas, they would talk about it when I was in their cars with them, me in the passenger seat and them in the driver's seat. I was usually in the front passenger seat, the type where the passenger sit next to the driver, that type of passenger seat. I was in the front passenger seat on the right, and they were on the driver's seat to the left. That's typically how it works in America. For those that don't live in America, that's how drive America usually works in vehicles. Or when I would walk and talk with them, we're walking together, and I'm next to them while we're on foot, And they would come to me with these ideas because they complained to me about the pimps engaging in typical pimp behavior. And I've heard the term pimpalicious back then. The women would, the sex worker women would reclaim that word as their form of sex work feminism at the time. And I remember when they would talk about pimps, it was always a horror story. It was always a terror story. You would see it on their faces, you hear it in their tone of voices, their body language, and how they would talk about these pimps. You know, I knew that it was going to be of internal ugliness. So at first I lovingly objected to them. I said, I don't want to pimp you out. I don't want to be your procurer. I don't want to be your panderer. I don't want to be your agent. I don't want to be your representative. I don't want to be your manager. Because they asked me to play all these roles for them, and I just immediately declined with a soft-spoken tone to my voice. And they adamantly insisted that I play all these roles for them. So let's look up these terms, okay? There are people that want to know, okay, what does this term mean? Okay, a lot of people don't know what the word pimp means, and that's not to dumb anybody down, but there are people that don't genuinely know. They also, so at first, they wanted me to be their pimp. Okay. Pimp, if male, also means brothel keeper, because they wanted me to be that for them. So they wanted me to be the male brothel keeper, right? Which means they wanted me to, and the agent. So all these terms in the sex world, sex work world, for some are interchangeable and some are totally different in meaning. But they wanted me to be their pimp, their male brothel keeper. They wanted me to be their agent because they engaged in prostitution. They wanted me to collect part of their earnings. They wanted me to receive the money in return for advertising services, physical protection, and for providing and monopolizing locations where the women who are engaging in prostitution could solicit their clients. They wanted me to do procuring, pimping, and pandering. Those words are interchangeable for they wanted me to engage in the facilitation and provision of those engaging in sex work, such as prostitution. And other sex work adult types in the arrangement of sex acts with customers. Basically, they wanted me to derive financial gain from their prostitution. They wanted me to operate their business where the prostitution occurs. They wanted me to transport them, the ones who are engaging in prostitution, to the location of their arrangements. And they wanted me to do trafficking. Well, I objected to all these things, especially. They wanted me to, like I said, derive financial gain from the prostitution, from their prostitution. They wanted me to transport them, the women who are engaging in prostitution, to the locations of their arrangements. And they wanted me to operate their business where their prostitution occurred. And they wanted me to traffic people who engage in prostitution into America for the purpose of soliciting sex. And I objected to all the above. I said, I'm a respecter of both girls and women, and I'm a respecter of human beings as a whole. And I said, no, these are not what I want to do. These are all illegal, and these are all immoral. How could you ask me to do such things? This is just evil. And again, they soft-spokenly, adamantly insisted that I do these things because, well, it's not bad when I do it. That's what they said to me. So, I understand, like, prostitution, according to Wikipedia.org, that the legality of certain actions of a madam or a pimp vary from one region to the next, which I did witness, and against my will, an organized crime globe. Because madams are female procurers, female pimps to women. And so what occurred after they said that was, I said, okay, I was 5 years old, so I was outsmarting them to the best of my ability. I said, okay, if I'm going to play all these sex work worlds, back then I said, if I'm going to play all these sex industry world, that's before I knew the term sex work to be what it is. It was either prostitution or sex industry, as it was called. So my exact words at the age of 5 to them, I said, if I'm going to play all these roles in the sex industry, one, no one can be addicted to drugs, alcohol, gambling, and tobacco. Two, no violence of any kind at all. Three, no one's allowed to drug anybody, rape anybody, and make anybody drunk. And then I said, four, y'all make most of the money, and I get a little bit of the money. And I said, these are the only ways I'm going to agree to doing these things. If y'all don't agree to any one of these things, then I'm not doing what you're asking me to do, what you're telling me to do. And then they were, to my unpleasant surprise, they agreed to all the above. So what occurred was, the closest I ever got to trafficking, I mean, it was against my will. I would talk to women, and if they expressed any interest in doing any kind of sex work, then I would have them, against my will, just work for me. That was as close as I ever got to trafficking people to, you know, DC, DMV, DC, Maryland, Virginia, to quote-unquote work for me. And what I do remember was I was popular amongst most of the madams and most of the pimps because I was known as the nice pimp. What that means was I was known as the nice pimp, meaning that I was the pimp that I never cursed at the sex. I never cursed at the sex workers. I never cursed out the sex workers. I never called them any names. I never hit them. I never abused them. I never committed a crime, any crimes against them. I never called them any slurs. I never insulted them. I was never rude to them. I never did any smear campaigns, never did any character assassinations. I never did any libel. I never did any slander. I never yelled at them. We never had any heated arguments. We never had an argument. We never had a debate. We were always soft-spoken and gentle in how we talked to each other. That's how I felt it was at the time. You know, they were never drugged. I did not allow them to use hardcore drugs. And you're probably like, but weren't you forced to sell drugs? I was like, because they wanted drugs. And I said, no, if you're gonna work for me, you can't use hardcore drugs ever. And as for pills, I said, you can't be addicted to those. And as for alcohol, tobacco, I said, like, look, I wish y'all wouldn't use that, those type of stuff, because then it makes it look like I'm the mean pimp, like a lot of the pimps and, you know, the madams in the world. And I said, you know, to a bare minimum with alcohol and tobacco, because I know you want to use them, and it's not against the law, okay, but a little bit. For the most part, no, but just a little bit. And they agreed, because I wanted to separate myself from the typical pimps and typical madams that are pretty much every bad thing that you can think of that's displayed in the media about them. That's actually all true about them, from what I saw. Well, I was forced to see, right? So I was popular with some madams and pimps, most of them as in pimps, because they're like, Antonio, like, they basically said Antonio, that was my street name, was able to control his, they said hoes, and he never lays a finger on them. He never attacks them. They just do everything he says. And he get a little bit of the money, and they make most of the money, and more women keep wanting to work for him. That's why I'd imagine the pimps, every time I was around them, they were always complimenting me on my pimplishness, because they were like, man, I'm doing it the normal way, and I'm having, and a lot of the, you know, my workers are unruly against me, but Antonio, the way you doing it, wow, you don't ever act hardcore, and they just fall in line. They never give you any attitude, never give me attitude. So a lot of the pimps and madams wanted to work with me. So, and most of the madams and pimps were nice to me. Most of them. I remember being around them, and they said, let's work together. So what happened was that we would all make money together. It was an equal amount. When it came to the other pimps and the madams, when it came to me, because they liked me so much, I would make most of the money. Like, okay, we're going to pimp together and madam together. So, you know, all the earnings you get from your, as they said, bitches, I had to get that out of my system, because it was just so heartbreaking to say it and just to process and hear it. And they said, okay, I got my whores, ugh, and I got my sluts and tramp, ugh. Okay, we're gonna make this like a group effort. And Antonio, you make most of the money because this is our way of paying homage to you, bruh, for showing us the pimp way, the madam way. So I would make most of the money both ways. I remember that they insisted that. They're like, since Antonio is the main, is the one who, you know, is teaching us, we gotta reward him by making sure the majority of the cut of the money go to him. So that's what would happen. And I remember directing brothels and massage parlors. I was forced to. I'm in the sex work world, and I tried not to accept any of these things, but what can you do when you're 5 years old? So I had to. And I remember there was only a small amount of pimps and madams that did not like how I was causing, in their minds, you're causing, you know, our slaves, some of them called them slaves, work, sex workers, you know, to, that they called their sex worker slaves. I didn't, they did. You're causing our slaves to leave us and to go work for you, and we're trying to compete with these other pimps and madams, but these pimps and madams keep going to you. So I had people having me, so first these madams tried to confront me, you know, trying to walk up to me and try to start a fight. And what I did to them, I said, I'm not gonna put my hands on a woman. I'm not going back and forth with you. I don't yell at women. I don't cuss out women. I'm not doing this with you. You can have an attitude all you want to. You're not gonna get a rise out of me. So you need to just let it go. Whatever anger you got towards me, chill out. I'm not gonna give you what you want. I'm not gonna feed you the energy you want. And I just remember saying that to them. And they still tried, but after a while I just ignored them. And I wouldn't respond to them. I would turn my head, look the other way, and act like I didn't hear them. And I would just go talk to the cool people I was talked to. And they would still try to get a rise out of me. And when they would try to touch me, I would just back away. And the people around me, they're like, what is your problem? He told you he don't want to be bothered with you. Leave him the hell alone. We're not going to tell you. And if I tell you again, it's going to be, like, in the words of the Gap Band, oops, upside your head. Say, oops, upside your head. And so after a while, the madams just left me alone. And it was, and they went from trying to start drama with me to actually being nice to me. It was weird. Maybe weird is an understatement. I agree with you strongly on that. Weird is an understatement. So what happened was, they apologized to me. And they started being a part of the whole making money with me thing. And they were happy to make most of the money with me because they apologized because they were jealous. And they stopped being jealous. They're like, you know what? I can't beat you, so I'm going to join you. And they said, I am never going to try to beat you again because, man, I'm making more money than ever before. I wasn't making as much, but now I'm working with you. Man, we cool as can be, Tonio. So, madams ended up being cool with me. In fact, the madams, and most of the madams and the pimps ended up being a part of the bodyguard, criminal sympathizer, team that also consisted of and spotters. So, there were pimps and madams, brothel keepers, procurers, and panderers that were added to the bodyguard protection team in my childhood at that time. And they pretty much adopted the rules that I adopted. Like, you had to have little usage of alcohol and tobacco, no hardcore drugs, no abuse, no violence. You can't cuss nobody out, can't cuss at people, no drugging people, no making anybody drunk. So they pretty much adopted my philosophies because it became popular within that world to live that way, because it kept attracting more women to work for us, predominantly me, in terms of sex working. So I want to actually go over the type of sex work that I want to talk about in terms of what happened. We did not use sex workers. Mean-spiritedly, because I was in charge of that sex work kind of world. So, for example, we did not tattoo sex workers as a mark of ownership at all. If they did get tattoos, it's because they had the free will to do so, which they did. We did not tattoo them in terms of putting our street names. We never did that. Even our likeness, we never did that. We really didn't do any grooming. It's just that if people expressed an interest in sex work voluntarily, we did not do anything to force them. They, you know, people meaning women, they just joined. It was just like, you want to or not. It wasn't forced, because I was like, you can't force people, because they're not going to enjoy working for you. They're not going to enjoy you. They're not going to enjoy the client. They're not going to enjoy anything about the business. So if you offer respectfully and kindly, they'll enjoy the work they'll do for us. So that's what I was telling them. I was 5 years old, so I was trying to strike a balance between not causing the typical issues in sex work, but I was forced to do it, so I had to find that balance. So there was no Romeo pimping, no lover boying, no love bombing, because I did not allow those things. Also because that would cause the police to be after us. We did not do any pimp sticks. Reckless eyeballing was not an issue. Because we made sure that only decent people got to sleep with the women. Because we would scope them out and we would check their energy. If you were a horrible guy, then we quickly said no. So, finesse pimps, no. No gorilla pimps, no popcorn pimps, no wannabes. We didn't do that at all. We had bottom girls, but it wasn't, you know, abusive. Like, all the issues in the sex work I mentioned in my childhood, they happened in terms of other pimps and madams, but when it came to me being in charge of these things, I just said, if we outlaw the stuff that is that's very much bad, then it kept police away from us, which it happened. I remember, you know, the hierarchy wasn't the typical type. We didn't really do bouncing from pimp to pip. We didn't really do the pimp moving task because I was like, see, it makes it easy for law enforcement to be on us. And so we didn't, no starvation, no manipulation, no psychological intimidation, no self-incrimination. We didn't do the typical pimping, maddowing thing that is, you know, normal in the typical pimp world, because I outlawed that stuff, and which made it damn near impossible for law enforcement to be after us. I said, if we outlaw all the bad stuff, then can law enforcement really be on us? And they agreed. So my style of pimping became very popular. I was forced to, because I was trying to balance sex workers' rights before I knew that was a concept. But I was forced to do these things, so I had to talk and be these kind of ways. So what I did not want was, you know, I did not want to be a misogynist. You know, we weren't big on Big Willie style, because that makes it easy for law enforcement to prosecute us. So we were simple living. We're basically minimalist. I was encouraging a simple living, minimalist lifestyle, because that was a part of my nature. And two, I didn't want to be another male misogynist, male misogyny, female misogyny were not allowed, and male misandry, female misandry were not allowed. Queerphobia was not allowed. We were all very respectful of LGBTQ plus non-binary people, some people felt what they felt in terms of the workers and, you know, other pimps and madams. It was like, just treat them with respect. Because in the other pimping, maddening, there was a plenty of queerphobia, but they would be like, hey, I may not like your such and such, but you paying me good money, so go ahead and sleep with such and such. So it was like queerphobia at the same, you know, with the slurs and, you know, not being quick to take queer clients and queer workers, but they're like, hey, they ain't making us the most money, so we'll use them. That's how it was in the sex work world. Some parts of the sex work world do have, I'm talking about the organized crime version, does have hate crimes. I witnessed that against LGBTQ plus people, people with disabilities, us too. But in the sex work that I was forced to do, none of that was allowed. So they all liked all these rules because they got to make their money and law enforcement wouldn't bother. In fact, a lot of law enforcement were the clients, and they some of the law enforcement, I should say, were the clients, so they knew what was happening and didn't care. So you're probably wondering, how did I leave? What was life like in that world? Well, there were brothel keepers, procurers, madams, pimps, and panderers, procurers that worked with us. And how I left that world, this was toward the end of my time at organized crime. All of a sudden, you know, law enforcement, I remember, started raiding, cracking down on brothels, whorehouses, because the abusive type of, you know, pimps and madams started attracting attention. So we all disbanded and shut down our business before the police came after us. This was my this was like 2 months before I left organized crime. And how, when did this start? I would say it was a 3 month span. And we just had to shut it down because we knew that we were going to all be busted. So we just shut down our sex work business for good. Did we keep in touch with each other? Yeah, you know, bumping into each other, you know, every week until, you know, criminals would start getting busted. I would hear about them from the streets. And according to the streets, some were put in jail. Some ended up murdered. Some lived their lives in hiding until law enforcement caught up with them. Some died of diseases. Some this was after my time organized crime. When I would bump into them, they nothing about them made me concerned because they acted very normal. But from time to time, streets would tell me about them, and they all met tragic fates. Some ended up in psych wards, and you know, some started getting indictments. So, you know, I remember when I first started doing sex work business, there were pimps, male pimps, who tried to fight me. And my criminal sympathizer team beat them. And then had them apologize to me because if they didn't apologize or express any kind of remorse or regret or sorrow or even saying I'm sorry, then gunplay was going to be next ensued. So that's why they were verbally apologetic to me. So after they healed from their injuries, which wasn't too bad, but it was bad, they ended up being a part of our sex work team. So when I was in the sex work world, I just remember a lot of people, the clients and customers were usually nice to me, and other people, the other workers, and us being in charge, myself and other sex work people, sex work hierarchical leadership. There was no whorephobia hierarchy because I didn't allow it. So, yes, that both happened in the other sex work world and organized crime, just not the ones that I was considered by the people in that world to be a leader of. Not my particular sex work world. I was made to work with other people, the leaders. So, some of the people in the sex work world that I worked with, some got robbed, you know. Some became homeless. Some lived depending on survival sex to have a place to stay, a roof over their head, clothes in the back, shoes on their feet, food to eat, and drinks to quench their thirst so they wouldn't burst. And I just wanted to say yes. When I was 5 years old, I was forced to hustle sex workers. But I wasn't considered the typical pimp that, you know, they all said that people would be used to. I wasn't that type at all. So I'm gonna mention a little bit about sex because this involves organized crime. So I wanted to be understood. None of my sex work experiences has anything to do with the porn interest. I would say that in the sex work world, I was forced to. So, when I first started being in sex work against my will, my first month of being organized crime, this is what happened. Some pimps in America tattoo prostitutes as a mark of ownership. The tattoo ought to be the pimp's street name or even their likeness. The mark might be as discreet as ankle tattoo or blatant as a neck or face tattoo or large-scale font across the prostitute's lower back, thigh, chest, or buttocks. I've seen all of that. Grooming. Some pimps employ what is known as the lover boy Romeo pimp method to recruit new prostitutes. This involves entrapping potential victims, usually young or vulnerable women, by first forming what appears to the victim to be a romantic relationship. After initial period of love bombing, the treatment of the victim then becomes abusive, and the victim is then forced into sex work by the pimp. I witnessed all that. Some pimp businesses have an internal structure built around violence for dealing with rule breakers. For example, some pimps have been known to employ a pimp stick, which is two coat hangers wrapped together in order to subdue unruly prostitutes. Although prostitutes can move between pimps, this movement sometimes leads to violence. For example, a prostitute could be punished for merely looking at another pimp. This is considered in some pimp miliuses to be reckless eyeballing. Violence can also be used on customers. For example, the customer attempts to evade payment or becomes unruly with a prostitute. I witnessed all of the above. Here are the other business and methods I witnessed in organized crime. Pimping is typically operated like a business. The pimp may have a bottom girl who serves as office manager, keeping the pimp apprised of law enforcement activity and collecting money from the prostitutes. Pimps recognize hierarchy among themselves. In certain pimp strata, the least respected or newer pimps are the popcorn pimps and wannabes. Popcorn pimps was a phenomenon which occurred among adolescent cocaine users of both sexes who utilize children younger than themselves to support their habits. A pimp who uses violence and intimidation to control their prostitutes is called a guerrilla pimp, while those who use psychological trickery to deceive younger prostitutes into becoming hooked into the system are called finesse pimps. In addition, a prostitute may bounce from pimp to pimp without paying the pimp moving tax. I witnessed all of the above in my very first month being an organized crime. Some pimps in the United States are also documented gang members, which causes concerns for police agencies and jurisdictions where prostitution is a significant problem. Pimping rivals narcotic sales as a major source of funding for many gangs. Gangs need money to survive, and money equates to power and respect. While selling drugs may be a lucrative for a gang, this activity often carries significant risk as stiff legal penalties and harsh mandatory minimum sentencing laws exist. However, with pimping, gang members still make money while the prostitutes themselves bear the majority of the risk. Pimping has several benefits to the gang that the pimp belongs to. These benefits include helping the gang recruit new members because the gang has women available for sex, and the money brought in by prostitution allows gang members to buy cars, clothes, and weapons, housing, jewelry, all of which help to recruit younger members into the gang by increasing the reputation of the gang in the local gang subculture. I witnessed all the above my very first month of organized crime. Here we go. Overview. Pimps and madams are diverse and variegated depending on the strata in which they work, and they enter and leave the sex industry for a variety of internal and external reasons, such as family pressure, interactions with the police, and in some cases, recruitment from peer sex workers. I witnessed all of that. Procuring can take abusive forms. Madam slash pimps may punish clients for physical abuse or failure to pay and enforce exclusive rights to turf, where their prostitutes may advertise and operate with less competition. And in many places where prostitution is outlawed, sex workers have decreased incentive to report abuse for fear of self-incrimination and increased motivation to seek any physical protection from clients and law enforcement that a madam slash pimp might provide. I witnessed all of that. The madam slash pimp prostitute relationship is often understood to be abusive and possessive, with the pimp slash madam using techniques such as psychological intimidation, manipulation, starvation, rape, and slash or gang rape, beating, tattooing to mark the women as quote unquote theirs, confinement, threats of violence towards the victim's family, forced drug use, forced alcohol use, forced tobacco use, forced gambling, and the shame from these acts. I witnessed all of that. In the U.S., madam slash pimps can be arrested and charged with pandering, or legally known as procurers. This, combined with the tendency to identify pimping with African-American masculinity, may provide some of the explanation for why approximately three-fifths of all quote-unquote confirmed human traffickers in the United States are African-American men. It has recently been argued that some of the extreme examples of violence cited in the article below come primarily from such stereotyping supported by Hollywood screenwriters, selective and decontextualized trial transcripts, and studies that have only interviewed parties to sex commerce institutions of rescue, prosecution, and punishment rather than engaging rigorous study in situ. I witnessed all of that. A 2018 study by researchers from the University of Montreal divides the concept of a pimp into three distinct categories: low-profile, mainly female; hustlers, predominantly male and violent, marking the common stereotype; and abuse, even male-female split, more likely to be subjected to violence than to commit it. I witnessed all of that. Procuring, pimping, or pandering is the facilitation or provision of a prostitute or other sex work in the arrangement of a sex. Let me slow down. Procuring, pimping, or pandering is the facilitation or provision of a prostitute or other sex worker in the arrangement of a sex act with a customer. A procurer, colloquially called a pimp if male, or a madam if female, though the term pimp has still extensively been used for female procurers as well, or a brothel keeper is an agent for prostitutes who collects parts of their earnings. The procurer may receive this money in return for advertising services, physical protection, or for providing and possibly monopolizing the location where the prostitute may solicit clients. Like prostitution, the legality of certain actions of a madam or a pimp vary from one region to the next. Examples of procuring include trafficking a person into a country for the purpose of soliciting sex, operating a business where prostitution occurs, transporting a prostitute to the location of the arrangement, deriving financial gain from the prostitution of another. I witnessed all the above, and I witnessed all that. So now let me talk more about what I saw, because I'm getting this all out of my system. I want to make sure. So, experiences of client violence by prostitutes working indoors or outdoors. So, I witnessed client violence. I witness the types of violence. So, for example, I saw client violence by prostitutes, and I saw client violence of prostitutes. So, of course, I saw pimp and madam violence by prostitutes. I also saw pimp and madam violence of prostitutes. So, basically, I saw them getting slapped, kicked, punched, threatened with physical violence, robbery, attempted robbery, beaten, threatened with a weapon, held against will, attempted rape, vaginal or anal, strangulation, kidnapped, forced to give a client oral sex, anal sex, vaginal sex, raped vaginally, attempted kidnap, slashed or stabbed, raped anally, report at least one incident of client violence to police. So I saw police violence by prostitutes, and I saw police violence of prostitutes, and they did all these types of violence I just said. So let me get to it. What did I see? Let's get there. So let's start here. I'm going to tell you exactly what I witnessed. So violent clients, pimps, and police officers. Perpetrators may include violent clients and pimps. Clients often attempt to maintain a power balance that favors them over the prostitutes. It is often done through different methods of violence, such as sexual, emotional, and physical. Though pimps may be perpetrators of violence against sex workers, 53% of sex workers in one study reported that violence at the hands of pimps is a major problem. 33% of subjects interviewed in that same study reported that the main benefit to having a pimp is the protection from potential assault. I witnessed all the above. I witnessed all that. Because of the illegality of sex work in many parts of the world, sex workers often have to service clients in discreet and isolated spaces where they are less likely to get caught by the police. Because of this isolation, sex workers are made more vulnerable to attacks by their clients. According to a study conducted on 130 people working in San Francisco as street sex workers, 82% have been physically assaulted, 83% have been threatened with a weapon, and 68% have been raped while working as prostitutes. I witnessed all of these things and all of the above, even in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. In countries such as the United States, sex work is illegal, and so sex workers are not able to report violence done against them in fear of being arrested themselves. In certain states, anti-prostitution mandates carry a minimum sentence and can increase to felony charge after multiple arrests, which leads to difficulty finding housing and employment and disqualification for welfare benefits. Additionally, sex workers may be registered as sex offenders or face deportation if they have precarious migratory or citizenship status. I witnessed all the above. I witnessed all that. Because of the stigma that exists around sex work, police are less likely to investigate attacks on sex workers. As one sex worker in South Africa reports, to gather evidence of a crime against a sex worker, they have to first take it seriously. If we go to police to report abuse, we're made fun of, we're told you deserve it, they chase you away, notes another sex worker. I witnessed all that and all the above, even in D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. Police officers themselves are common perpetrators of violence against prostitutes. A study of sex workers in Phnom Penh, Cambodia, found that half of the women had been beaten by police and about a third had been gang raped by police. South Africa, where sex work has been illegal since the former apartheid regime criminalized in 1957, police officers often fine sex workers in ordered sums of money and pocket the cash, resulting in a pattern of economic extortion of sex workers by state agents. I witnessed all of the above and all that, even in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. Let's see here. By sex workers, because of the increased risk of violence associated with working in sex work, many prostitutes have begun adopting their own personal policies to reduce the likelihood of becoming the victims of violence. A study by Marine A. Norton Hawk found that 40% of sex workers have a policy of refusing to provide services in an alley, 54% refuse to provide services in a drug house, 68% refuse to provide services in an abandoned building. Often sex workers must rely on themselves and each other for support in ending violence, as many campaigns to end violence against women ignore the needs of sex workers. I saw all that. I witnessed all that, even D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. When I first started witnessing sex work, I did see prostitution in alleys, drug houses, and abandoned buildings. When I first started seeing these things, like I say again. So sex workers, particularly those engaged in street prostitution, are also sometimes targeted by serial killers who may consider them easy targets and less likely to be missed, or who use their religious social stigma associated with sex workers as justification for their murder. So I witnessed all that. I did. So, for example, violence against prostitutes occurs worldwide, but through physical or psychological forms, the victims are predominantly women. In extreme cases, violent acts have led to their murder while in their workplace. I witnessed all the above. Women working in prostitution experience higher levels of violence against them than the general population of women. A long-term study published in 2004 estimated the homicide rate for active female prostitutes who had worked in Colorado Springs from 1967 to 1999 to be 204 per 100,000 person years. The overwhelming majority of the 1,969 women in the study were street prostitutes. Only 126 worked in massage parlors, and most of these women were also prostitutes on the streets. I witnessed all the above in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. Although the Colorado Springs prostitutes appear to be representative of all U.S. prostitutes in terms of prevalence and number of sexual partners, while they worked as prostitutes and died in many parts of the country, prostitutes elsewhere might have different mortality rates and profiles. This homicide figure is considerably higher than that for the next riskiest occupations in the United States during the 1980s, 4 per 100,000 for female liquor store workers and 29 per 100,000 for male taxi cab drivers. The prevalence of violence against prostitutes varies by location. A study of prostituted women and girls in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, over the age of 14, used illicit drugs other than marijuana, found that 57% of prostitutes experienced some form of sex-based violence over an 18-month period. A study of 1,000 female, both cisgender and transgender prostitutes in Phnom Penh, Cambodia, found 93% of women surveyed have been the victim of rape in the past year. I witnessed all the above in the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area. Types of violence. So physical violence is defined by World Health Organization as the intentional use of physical force or power, threat or actual against oneself, another person, or against a group of or a community, which either results in or has a high likelihood of resulting in injury, death, psychological harm, maldevelopment, or deprivation. Physical violence is more commonly experienced by outdoor prostitutes, with 47% of prostitutes working outdoors reported being kicked, punched, or slapped in one study. In a study of prostitutes working in San Francisco, 82% of participants reported having experienced some type of physical violence since entering prostitution, with 55% of these assaults being committed by a client. A different study found a slightly lower rate, with 74% of sex workers reported experiencing some form of physical abuse in their lifetime. The general consensus among most studies regarding violence against prostitutes is that rates of physical violence against prostitutes is extremely high, particularly among women who experience higher rates of physical violence than their male counterparts. I witnessed all the above in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. Psychological abuse, also referred to as mental abuse or emotional abuse, is characterized by a person subjecting or exposing another to behavior that may result in psychological trauma, including anxiety, chronic depression, or post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. The United Nations Population Fund says that this type of violence includes what is not limited to being insulted, example, called derogatory names or made to feel bad about oneself, being humiliated or belittled in front of other people, being threatened with loss of custody of one's children, being confined or isolated from family or friends, being threatened with harm to oneself or someone one cares about, repeated shouting, inducing fear through intimidating words or gestures, controlling behavior, and the destruction of possessions. I witnessed all the above in the organized crime world of the sex industry, not the ethical kind of sex work industry, in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. There are certain types of psychological and emotional abuse that sex workers are more prone to, such as denial of basic needs, forced drug alcohol consumption, and being arrested for carrying condoms, to name a few. Women working in prostitution are especially vulnerable to psychological abuse, particularly verbal abuse, because many customers and other members of society view them as whores or as generally undesirable women. Often verbal abuse will occur either while the service is being given or after it has been given and the customer is not satisfied. In both these cases, verbal abuse can be a precursor to sexual violence from the client. In one study, 78% of sex workers reported having experienced emotional or psychological abuse in their lifetime. I witnessed all of the above in the D.C. and Maryland, Virginia area. Sexual violence is any sexual act or attempt to obtain a sexual act by violence or coercion. Unwanted sexual comments or advances, acts to traffic a person, or acts directed against a person's sexuality, regardless of the relationship to the victim. The risk of sexual abuse are overall lower than the risk of physical abuse, with the exception of indoor prostitutes who report a higher rate of rape or attempted rape than any one type of physical violence. In one study, 44% of sex workers reported having experienced sexual abuse in their lifetime. Rates of sexual assault and rape are higher among women, including transgender women, than among men, though the overall rate is high, with one study finding that 68% of respondents have been raped since entering prostitution. These high levels of sexual violence suffered by sex workers have very traumatic effects on the men and women working as prostitutes. High levels of rape and other forms of sexual violence while working as a prostitute have been linked to higher levels of PTSD. I witnessed all of the above in the D.C. and Maryland, Virginia area. Contributing factors. Studies have shown that younger prostitutes tend to experience more client violence than their older colleagues. Furthermore, cisgender, transgender female sex workers are also more likely to experience violence committed by a client than their male prostitute counterparts. I witnessed all of the above in the D.C. and Maryland, Virginia area. Social stigmas. Transgender sex workers. As represented through a study on transgender sex workers, trans women, especially those of color, tend to endure higher rates of violence than that of cisgender women due to discriminations and intersectional factors. There are a variety of contributing factors, including the social stigma surrounding transgender women, that push them into sex work as a means of survival. This includes high unemployment rates, typically due to legalized discriminations, a lack of education or career opportunities, and mental health issues resulting from transphobic experiences from adolescence through adulthood. It is shown in one study that transgender women chose to remain in sex work despite the risk of violence and HIV contraction as a means to gain the social and economic support that society typically fails to provide. This is especially seen with Black transgender women who are paid less for sex work and are therefore pushed to see more clients, increasing their chances of exposure to violence. I witnessed all of that. Saw all of it in the D.C. Maryland, Virginia area. Although transgender sex workers are able to attain their own sense of community, they're still faced with discrimination, which often represents itself in violence on the streets. On top of the typical risk of rape and robbery that prostitutes face by their clients, transgender prostitutes face additional burden of transphobic acts of violence and harassment. One study includes 48 transgender women of color from San Francisco who share their experiences with violence during sex work. One participant recalls the police see you on the sidewalk, they will snatch your hair off your head. If you have on a wig, and they will call you boy loud so everybody can hear over the speakerphone. Another participant describes being forced into performing oral sex on an officer in order to escape the threat of arrest. This transphobic violence is also perpetrated by clients, as shown through another participant who describes the death of her friend who was killed and dismembered by a client who originally believed she was a cisgender woman. I witnessed all of that. And saw that in the D.C. Maryland, Virginia area. So, legal versus illegal sex work. Laws prohibiting prostitution can make it difficult for the men and women engaging in prostitution to report any violence they may experience while on the job. I saw that. Other transaction arrangements to meet up with clients must be made in secret in places where prostitution is illegal. I saw that. The decriminalization of sex work in New Zealand has shown that violence is reduced when sex workers are not forced to work alone or in isolated places. I strongly agree with that. Sex work was always legal in New Zealand, but decriminalization removed laws that increase danger, which makes me happy. This is exactly what I saw in that type of world. Now you understand why I am for sex workers' rights. And now you understand why I call myself a member of the sex workers' rights movement. So I just want to say, now you fully understand more of the reasons why I barely have sex, why I barely date. Because there are plenty of violent, abusive, criminalistic, traumatic, and victimizers in the world. So that inspires more of my sexual self-discipline and sexual self-control. And overall, it partly inspires my self-control and my self-discipline. So, because I support sex workers' rights, I support healthy brothel keepers and healthy brothel keeping. I support healthy madams and healthy madaming. I support healthy pimps and healthy pimping. I support healthy procurers, healthy procuring. I support healthy panderers and healthy pandering. I'm not a fan of trafficking. I'm not a fan of forced prostitution. I'm not a fan of forced sex work either. Other parts of that I want to talk about is migrant sex work. Let's get into it. So, I want to talk about this, so I want to make it clear. Reasons for migration and sex work. Low economic status, harsh living conditions, and migrant sex workers' home country often serve as push factors for migration to more economically advantaged nations. Vast migration between third and first world countries in response to diminishing economic prospects at home has been prevalent since economic globalization widened the income gap between developing and developing nations. As a result, the number of international migrants up between 1960 and 2005. International migration has increasingly become feminized, with females making up 50% of all international migrants. So, saw all these things growing up. Reasons for sex work. Migrants enter sex work for a variety of reasons. Female migrants largely migrate for jobs in the care sector, such as domestic work, child care, and sex work, as opposed to males who engage in more physically demanding labor, such as construction and agriculture. Some migrants may have originally intended to work in commercial sex, while others found themselves turning to commercial sex after alternate labor means failed or proved to be less lucrative. Others may engage in sex work as a result of situations involving the need to pay off debts incurred during migration or fees to a wide variety of middlemen who may help secure papers, travel, passage, and places to work. For women who engage in rural to urban migration in developing nations with growing free trade zones and importation of foreign financial capital and tourism, sex work is often more lucrative than alternative forms of labor, such as working in manufacturing factories or contracting to foreign corporations. Women can choose to engage in commercial sex over these forms of labor, or use sex work to supplement other labor activities such as domestic work. I saw all these things growing up. Thank you. The legal nature of migrant sex work makes it difficult to obtain reliable and conclusive estimates of migrant sex workers. However, social scientists have discovered significant trends regarding the identity of migrant sex workers. While migrants who work in agriculture or construction are largely male, migrants who engage in commercial sex work are largely female, with ages ranging from the early teens to middle age. Migrant sex workers make up significant proportions of the sex worker population in many countries, with estimates ranging from 37% in the UK to 90% in Spain. I saw all these things in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area. Migrant sex workers are diverse in terms of nationality of origin. Certain national contexts, such as in the United Arab Emirates, sex workers come from a diverse range of nations of origin, such as Russia, Nigeria, and Thailand. About 60% of sex workers in large Dutch cities, for instance, are women of color from developing nations. As a result, what distinguishes migrant sex workers from local sex workers are primarily their low socioeconomic status, primarily illegal immigration status, and poor language skills. This results in infrequent marginalization in the unregulated and dangerous sectors of the sex industry. The organized crime version, not the ethical version. I witnessed all these things growing up. Migrant sex is sex work done by migrant workers. It's significant because of its role as a dominant demographic of sex work internationally. It has common features across various contexts, such as migration from rural to urban areas and from developing to industrialized nations, and economic factors that help to determine migrant status. Migrant sex workers have also been the subject of discussions concerning the legality of sex work, its connection to sex trafficking, and the views of national governments and non-governmental organizations about the regulation of sex work and the provision of services for victims of sex trafficking. So, I want to make it clear. I did see all of that growing up in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. Sex work is not the same as sex trafficking. Stop the conflation. Of course I witnessed human trafficking was victimized by it, and some were migrants. You already know that story. But migrant sex work should not be seen as human trafficking inspiration. Migrant sex work is what I value in terms of sex workers' rights because I value migrants. I hate migrant human trafficking. I hate migrant sex trafficking. I hate non-migrant human trafficking. I hate non-migrant sex trafficking. I love migrant sex work with adults only, and that's it. I love non-migrant sex work between adults only, and that's it. So now you fully understand more of the reasons why I barely have sex, because also I recognize that there's so many people who don't value migrants and non-migrants, and sexually they don't value migrants and non-migrants because non-sexually they don't value both types of people. So now you fully understand my mentality towards living the sexual middle way. And the last time I'll say it, it means I avoid sexual overindulgence and I avoid sexual asceticism on camera and off camera.